Welcome, my friends, to Freedom Law School's Freedom Hour. This is Peyman Motahedeh, the president of Freedom Law School at freedomlawschool.org. In this presentation tonight, I have a very special guest for you. This man is not just an old friend of mine. He is a celebrated whistleblower. The first man ever with the IRS to come out and expose IRS fraud and deception of the American people for trillions of dollars for decades. And he has an incredible story to share with you about his career as a special agent with the IRS's Criminal Investigation Division. Yes, those guys that put people in prison for taxes, carry a gun. He was one of them. So in this presentation, you're going to get the first part of a three-part series on his incredible journey from a gun-carrying IRS special agent to whistleblower, hero, confronting the IRS commissioner himself at the top about the corruption, systematic corruption of the entire income tax system, to him leaving, to the IRS, try to silence him, put him in prison even, and failing. He still stood on top of his incredible story you'll hear. So be sure to watch part two and three, which we'll be doing in the upcoming weeks after this program. So with that, help me welcome Mr. Joseph Bannister. Joe, welcome to being with me at the program, my friend. It's great to see you.
Thanks, Peyman. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, to see you in person, as we've done many times over the years.
By the way, Joe Bannister's website is agentfortruth.com. Agentfortruth.com, because that's the kind of man Joe Bannister has been. So if you want to know the truth, he's the agent that will get you to it. So without any further delay, let's start, Joe, if you could tell our audience about your background, you know, how you, you know, your family situation, and, you know, give us a rundown of how you, you know, after, you know, high school, what did you do, you know, maybe about your family a little bit, and get to eventually become, you know, looking to get a job at the IRS.
Thank you. Well, you know, Joseph Bannister is my real name. I was born and raised in San Jose, California, middle class, Roman Catholic family, baptized, born and raised a Catholic, still a Catholic today, almost my 63rd birthday. And anyway, grew up, but went to Catholic schools, Catholic elementary school, Catholic high school, and then on to junior college in San Jose, San Jose City College, and then from there to San Jose State University. I have three younger brothers. My mom and dad were married until death did they part. My father passed away just a few months before I was sworn in the to the IRS Criminal Investigation Division back in 1993. So, you know, pretty typical middle-class upbringing. I went to San Jose State. Took me about 5 years, a five-year plan to get through college. And when I graduated from college, I went ahead and pursued a CPA certificate. By the way, I was an accounting major at San Jose State. And so typically it's not unusual for someone with an accounting degree to try to pursue becoming a certified public accountant, so a CPA. So I did that. I graduated in 1986 from San Jose State. And from about, you know, 86 through 91, I worked in the accounting field. Started out a very small firm founded by two partners who used to be managers at a firm called Pete Marwick, which for many years now has been known as KPMG. And so worked there for about 3 years. It's an international accounting firm. And received my CPA certificate, I think around 1991 timeframe. So during these 4 or 5 years after graduating, it took me that long to realize that, you know, maybe accounting wasn't going to be very, a very exciting career, and I needed to spice up my career a bit more. So I decided to pursue a career in law enforcement, and went ahead and, you know, did that. I investigated which agencies were basically looking for people with an accounting, finance, tax background. And I settled on the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, and also the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. And another reason besides the accounting field being a bit boring was that I had lots of relatives and friends who were either in government service or law enforcement government service. In fact, my the next brother, Bannister brother down from me, became a California Highway Patrol officer. And, you know, at this point, he's actually retired. He retired as a lieutenant in the CHP, California Highway Patrol. The next brother down worked in the Daly City Fire Department as a firefighter originally, and he's risen to battalion chief in the Daly City Fire Department. Still there, actually hasn't retired yet. And then the baby brother, the fourth one down, Jeff, he just retired from the San Jose Police Department after a 25, 30-year career as a police officer with the city of San Jose. So I got to take a break from talking, but I mean, that basically brings us up through, you know, college and choosing to an avenue of law enforcement, and particularly federal law enforcement.
So having that background in accounting that you had in formal education and also working in the field, what got you to look outside of that into becoming a special agent with the IRS's criminal investigation division?
Well, the two brothers that I mentioned that were police officers for a career, that was uniformed police, right? The San Jose Police Department or the California Highway Patrol, and had a lot of, you know, other friends, a cousin who was in the Sacramento Police Department, friends that I grew up with that were in the San Jose Police Department. So basically I knew that there was a uniformed law enforcement route. But I figured that with my background in accounting, that more of a criminal investigator role would be more appropriate. And in fact, there was also a friend of the family who had spent a career as an IRS special agent. And just for your listeners and viewers, as far as differentiating, the reason that they call a special agent special is because they have special duties that aren't shared by other agents, say, within the IRS. So the special means that you have powers of arrest, powers to execute search warrants, powers to carry a firearm, things like that. So where in the IRS you might have someone called a revenue agent or a revenue officer, my title in the IRS was special agent. And in fact, all the federal agencies, or a great majority of them, have a special agent position. So when you see an FBI agent interviewed, a current one or a retired one, they're almost invariably going to be an FBI special agent. The ICE agents that you see out there doing investigations, Immigration Customs Enforcement, they are special agents. So pretty much Secret Service, the agents that protect the president and others, they are special agents. So there's a great 1811 series, which makes you designated as the special agent with these powers of arrest, powers to execute search warrants, you know, powers to criminally investigate people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So being that there was this family friend who actually spent his career as an IRS special agent, And then that person who ended up becoming my boss years later, Bob Guarini, he also worked closely with other special agents in other bureaus like the FBI or the DEA. So through Bob, who was an IRS special agent, I was introduced to some of these other agencies, such as FBI, DEA, Secret Service. The precursor to ICE was known as the INS for Immigration and Naturalization Service. They had special agents also. The Customs Service did. So anyway, there's lots of choices, but I found that my first choice was the FBI. And again, this is back in the 1990s when, you know, Waco and Ruby Ridge and things like that were happening. But for many decades prior to that, the FBI had a pretty stellar reputation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so FBI is my first choice, but I also applied to the IRS Criminal Investigation Division, primarily because this gentleman, Bob Guarini, you know, kind of sold me on, well, hey, you know a lot about income tax. You're a CPA. I think the IRS would be a good fit. And I'm thinking, well, gosh, I don't know if I want to work for the IRS, you know. But it turned out that the FBI had a hiring freeze. And even though I was fully qualified to be sent to Quantico to begin training and was basically waiting for that opportunity, the IRS had a hiring authority. They were not affected by the hiring freeze. And the IRS offered me a position in August of 1993. So I went ahead and said yes, accepted that position. And by November of 1993, I was sworn in the San Francisco office of the IRS Criminal Investigation Division to be a special agent.
Well, and during that special agent career that you had, could you tell us a little bit about the training you got, and how long you were for, any special things you ever come across, people don't file income tax? Tell us a little bit more about that, your tenure as a special agent, Joe.
Well, of course, prior to going to the IRS, as I said, I did earn a CPA certificate, and I worked in public accounting, as they call it, the KPMG international firm, and also a couple smaller accounting firms. I was a controller in a venture capital firm in Menlo Park, California. So I had quite a bit of experience on the outside, so to speak, outside of government. And typically, most IRS agents, at least back then, probably still today, would graduate from college or high school, and they would go directly into the IRS and then come out into the private sector, if at all. Whereas me, I was in the private sector to begin with and then went into the IRS. So a little bit of a culture shock that I wasn't prepared for when I went in to work for the IRS. Anyway, typically, I imagine my experiences are pretty typical. Your first day on the job as an IRS special agent, of course, you're eventually going to carry a gun, have a badge, do criminal investigations. But your first day on the job, when you've had no criminal investigator training, you don't have a firearm because you haven't been trained with one yet. And so you basically just do, they kind of keep you under close watch so you don't, do anything stupid. And you have what's called a coach, a person, a seasoned, experienced special agent who will, kind of show you the ropes, perhaps take you out on some investigative trips, to interview a witness and try to give you some experience. But I remember in my case, I was there a day or two, and I think I even wanted to just leave the office while, during a work day. And they said, no, you can't leave the office or talk with anyone because you have to go get sworn in. In other words, I had to go get sworn in to support and defend the Constitution. I had to take my constitutional oath before I could really do anything relating to my job. So I thought that was, quite interesting. So I was hired in the San Francisco office. And for those that, know or don't know the San Francisco Bay Area, you have to go across the Bay Bridge to Oakland, where there's another federal building. And that's where I was sworn in, sworn oath to support and defend the Constitution. And then about a month or so after I was hired, then I was sent to Glencoe, Georgia, to the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center for an 8-week criminal investigator training. And that is a kind of a basic training that special agents from all the different agencies go to. Typically, the FBI and the DEA train at the Quantico training facility in Quantico, Virginia, whereas most of the other agencies, you know, EPA and Secret Service and Border Patrol and ICE, and they all train at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia. So that's where I was sent in late 1993, early 1994 for an 8-week training session. And there was also, well, interestingly enough, I was chosen or voted to be president of that training class. And it was kind of funny the way that happened, because I was sitting in this arena, kind of a amphitheater classroom, and I'm down at the bottom because my name is Bannister, so I'm at the beginning of the alphabet. And they asked for someone to volunteer to collect picture money, you know, money for the class picture. And I look around when they ask for a volunteer and no one's raising their hand. And I'm thinking, well, how hard could it be to collect picture money? I mean, I'll volunteer. So I raised my hand and volunteered. And then the next question was, okay, well, now we have to elect a class president. And so out of 40-something people, the only person that raised their hand and got noticed by everybody was me, because I volunteered to collect the picture money. So they ended up electing me class president. And so I was class president for the 8-week session. And then when I came back for a second 8-week session, we all had to come back for more specialized criminal investigator training. And at that point, I was reelected class president for another 8-week session. So took lots of video and pictures. I was also kind of the class historian. I was able to bypass any of the tax classes because I was already a certified public accountant. And with the tax training I already had, I basically wasn't required to take the IRS training, because as far as they could tell, I already knew the material. So there was about 16 weeks of that total training near the beginning of my career in 1993, 1994. And then it was, I think, like March of 1994, I was fully trained, you know, with the firearm, with all the criminal investigator training. And I was sent back to the San Francisco office to begin, you know, a full, expected a 20-year career with the IRS. Eventually, I was actually transferred from San Francisco back down to San Jose, which is where I, you know, was born and raised, where I grew up. And so, you know, mid-1994, I thought it was pretty cool that, you know, I'd become a federal agent, federal criminal investigator in my hometown. And the IRS didn't typically move agents around like the FBI, the Secret Service would. So I had this pretty cool, you know, law enforcement job right there in my hometown. So when we would do surveillances and investigations, you know, I pretty much knew all my surroundings, all the way from San Jose up to San Francisco and everywhere in between.
And you had a very interesting experience, Joe, on your first day at the job, which relates to the you opening up the Internal Revenue Code, the law, the Bible of the IRS, which is a very interesting aspect of your experience early on. Maybe perhaps you can share that with the audience.
Sure. So first day on the job, you know, As I said, I came from the outside. I wasn't a government worker prior to then. And so, you know, I had the attitude and the ethics that, well, if I'm getting paid to do work, I should be actually working. But as I mentioned, without any training and had barely taken the oath to support and defend the Constitution over in Oakland, I couldn't really do much, but I didn't want to do nothing, you know, twiddle my thumbs, because I was getting paid. So I looked up on the shelf of my cubicle and I saw that there was a volume of the Internal Revenue Code. And I forget if there were two or three, you know, big thick books at the time. You're holding it up. I think there was actually two or three volumes of the same code. You've got it all in one bound volume, mm-hmm. but yeah, you mm-hmm. get, that gives the viewers the idea. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, well, I know that there's certain sections of the Internal Revenue Code that deal with criminal violations of the income tax laws. So how about if I crack open the Internal Revenue Code and begin to review those sections that I would be investigating and enforcing? So I cracked open the books and I was, you know, looking through and, you know, basically like I was sitting at a library. And again, I had nothing else I could do because I wasn't allowed really to do anything else. And so my boss at the time, who was a former Marine, lot thicker mustache than I have, real gruff guy, and he comes over and he says, "Bannister, what are you doing?" And I just looked up at him sheepishly and said, "Well, I'm just looking at the Internal Revenue Code, you know, some of the statutes that I'm going to be enforcing and investigating." And he said, "Close that book. You're not a CPA anymore. You're an IRS special agent." And I just thought, you know, as I mentioned about culture shock, I just thought it was really odd. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't really think there's anything like conspiratorial about it, but it just kind of shows the myopic, I don't know, just closed-mindedness of somehow, you know, I was doing something wrong by looking at inside the Internal Revenue Code.
I mean, your job will be to enforce the criminal federal tax laws here in the Internal Revenue Code book, and his boss is saying, "Don't worry about the law. Don't even try to understand any aspect of this voluminous books of laws that you are going to be paid working full-time to enforce. Don't even crack it open, close it up. We'll just tell you what you do, whether it's lawful or not. Well, you have to just trust us," basically. That's kind of an attitude they have, which is kind of interesting because people don't realize that these guys, Joe, at the IRS, are ignorant of the law. They're not taught the law. They're just taught to do this, do that, the other, whatever your boss tells you. The law, let us at the very higher levels worry about that. So that's kind of interesting, Joe. Now tell us, how you got into the whole tax truth movement? How was it that you heard about the income tax system being a complete utter fraud on the American people, and that got you to look into this direction that you eventually ended up leaving the IRS?
Well, as I kind of mentioned, back when I was first sworn in, when I started the work at the IRS as an IRS criminal investigator, a special agent, was November of 1993. And so for about 3 years, till around December of 1996, I had, you know, really the time of my life in terms of professional satisfaction. I was had earned a certified public accountant certificate, so I was a CPA, and I was a, you know, gun-carrying, badge-wearing IRS criminal investigator working in my hometown, making pretty good money, although I had to take a huge pay cut from the private sector when I went into the government. But, you know, eventually after those 3 years, I was able to work my way up the pay scale. And so I thought those first 3 years would be the first 3 years of a 20-year career with the IRS. And, you know, a law enforcement career in the federal government can be as little as 20 years, and then you're out. So I started when I was about 30, and I would have been able to retire, about 12, 13 years ago when I was 50. With a really nice retirement and lifetime benefits. And that was the expectation after the first 3 years there. But in about December of 1996, about 3 years into my career, I was listening to a talk radio show in the San Francisco Bay Area, as I typically did if I was out in my government car doing investigations. listening to the AM radio talk show. The call letters are KSFO, and the radio station is still around, 560 on the dial. And so there was a host on KSFO. His name was Jeff Metcalf. I spelled his first name a little bit different, G-E-O-F-F, Jeff Metcalf. And Jeff Metcalf had a guest on his show named D.V. Kidd. And her name's also unusual, D-E-V-V-Y, last name Kidd, K-I-D-D. And so D.V. Kidd is on Jeff Metcalf's show, and she's talking about, among other things, the federal income tax, and claiming that the federal income tax is voluntary. In other words, there was no mandate in the law, no requirement in the law to file tax returns and pay, I should say file income tax returns and pay federal income tax. And so I literally, when I heard her say this on the show, I was in my government car with my, Sig Sauer 9mm handgun on my hip and my handcuffs, and I was out doing investigations, and I heard her make these claims, and I thought, wow, I always thought this Jeff Metcalf guy was pretty honorable, and his guests had all kinds of truthful information, and I was very impressed by how honest he was and how his guests always had details and information that were provable. They had evidence to back it up. But when he had D.V. Kidd claiming that the income tax was voluntary, there was no mandate to pay it or to file federal income tax returns, I thought, wow, how could I have misjudged this talk show host to be allowing this woman to make these outrageous claims and make them on a radio station where, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people are going to hear these outrageous claims. So that was in December of 1996, about 3 years into my career with the IRS. And so I decided I have got to get to the bottom of this, okay? Either I am not the great investigator that I thought I was, where I can tell if I think that somebody is truthful and honorable like a Jeff Metcalf, and yet the guy's a total clown, he's having clownish people on his show making these outrageous claims. Well, that's not good for me because I'm not a very good judge of people's body language and their character. But by the same token, if there's something to this, and yet my job is to, actually investigate people, arrest them, give the investigative information to a prosecutor, to put them in prison, to convict them and put them in prison, then I probably should get to the bottom of this for that reason also. And so that's my motivation initially to get in touch with D.V. Kidd. And we are talking about the late 90s, basically early 90s, early to mid 90s. And so I sent away, she said on the radio show that if you sent $2, $1 or $2, in an envelope to an address in Colorado, that she would send her information, her brochures, her booklets. And so I sent away my $2 in December of 1996. And in early to mid-January of 1997, I received these two booklets in the mail. One was called Why a Bankrupt America, and then the other was called Blind Loyalty. And in these booklets, D.V. basically outlined all kinds of stuff that today in, 2026 are kind of, very familiar to the public because we have had the benefit of the Internet, since since the early 90s. We have to remember that back in the early to mid-90s, the Internet was barely up and running or available to most people. And so I'm, basically still reading her booklets and getting them in the snail mail. Mm-hmm. But in there, she gave more details about many issues, but concentrating on the income tax, that was where my focus was. And she mentioned various people who had more information about the income tax, she would provide excerpts from their court cases or their, you know, claims that they made, and then provide addresses and phone numbers for some of these people. And so one person in particular, his name was Bill Conklin, and I think by this point Bill's passed away. But anyway, I called up Bill because the phone number was in his press release, and I told him, you know, I'm not, I'm an IRS special agent, but I'm not calling you to do a sting on you or, you know, lie to you. I'm truly just trying to find out what's going on here with the income tax. And your name was in DV Kids booklet, and so I'm trying to find out more information. And so he suggested that I contact this a guy named Paymon. And we're talking about, you know, January, February of 1997, and I did not like Paymon. Okay, is this going to be like the king of the tax protesters? You know, what am I getting myself into? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I started the ball rolling calling Bill Conklin, so he said to call Paymon, so I called Paymon. Mm-hmm. So Paymon was the second person, you know, after Bill, mm-hmm. that I got in touch with. And Paymon began to, I guess first off, and, you know, maybe Paymon can describe how he was taking it on his end. But
interesting. Let me tell you about that, Joe, because when you first called me, I was called by Bill and said, look, this guy's a special agent of the IRS, but I think he's sincere. He's not looking to investigate us, a criminal. He really wants to know the truth. And I told him, great, if he is, we'll educate him, tell him the truth, no problem. And then when you called, I could tell you were sincere, and you said you want to know the truth about our claims. So, yes, that's when I started educating you and putting you in touch with other people, the movement. I gave you our first course called A Practical Road to Freedom from Oppressive Taxation Control. I used to teach that class. 9-week class, once a week for 9 weeks for 3 hours. I recorded that audio tape. I gave you one of those. I labeled it for your midnight basketball. So in case one of your colleagues or your boss sees that in your car, what is this stuff you got here, this Practical Road to Freedom course? Is this some kind of a tax protest material? Why are you looking at this, you know? So in order to protect you from that potential confrontation with your, you know, boss, as I put that label on there and let you study. And you met Sean and Steve of Free Enterprise Society and others from the Freedom Movement. And but you took a little while to do your investigation, Joe. I remember you're pretty thorough, and you took over a while to read at nighttime to investigate things. Is that what you did at nighttime or weekends? You would research on your own everything that you came across?
Yeah, the IRS special agents, I presume it's still the case, we would work 50-hour work weeks. So you'd basically get paid an extra quarter of your, you know, salary as overtime. And so rather than a 40-hour week, you'd work 40 plus 10 hours or 50-hour work weeks. So I had a 50-hour work week. By the time I was communicating with you, I was in San Jose. I had made that transfer from San Francisco down to San Jose. But, you know, with the commute back and forth and a 10-hour work day and then soccer coach to my, you know, young sons and, you know, husband and paying all the bills, finding the time was difficult, but I knew I wanted to get to the bottom of it too. So yeah, it took me a couple of years, all throughout 1997, all throughout 1998. And of course you and I kept in communication, and you put me in touch with other people, other attorneys, CPAs, all kinds of people that I could talk with, and, you know, about other topics besides the income tax. But, you know, for our purposes, we can concentrate on that. There's enough interesting information there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it took me a couple of years to kind of get through it and really make sure. make sure as best I could. And there came a point, after that 2 years when I realized, I think I've gathered about all the information that I can gather to prove that there's something rotten here and that I need to confront my supervisors at the IRS. I guess when I say confront, I more mean approach them. I didn't, want to punch anybody in the nose or get mad at anyone. But I definitely, if I had any bias at all, as I started and during that 2 year period, is that this couldn't possibly be true, right? Because my entire professional life revolved around the income tax, accounting degree where you take tax classes at the university and then the CPA exam. One of the parts to the CPA exam is on taxation, largely income taxation. Then I go in and become an IRS special agent and there's more training there. And so, I was not believing it could possibly be true. But as a criminal investigator, what's your job is to gather evidence, and not just any evidence, but evidence that could actually be put into court because it's factual, because it's provable, because it's corroborated by other evidence. And so during that 2 year period, I just kept gathering more and more evidence in the form of, statutes, regulations, court cases, history of the income tax and the laws that were passed. And, what I found interesting, of course, is as a financial investigator, the thing that we sniff out is the paper trail, right? It's the paper trail that's always going to get the bad guy. And so the thing is, though, the IRS and the income tax has quite the paper trail also. And so I simply followed that same paper trail. And, surprisingly, I guess you could say, came to a conclusion that there's really something deceitful, and illegal, apparently illegal, about this income tax system. And so I need to approach my bosses at the IRS and let them know that, I've been looking into this and I've come to some very concerning, preliminary conclusions. And so that's what I did. I was still working at the IRS during that 2 year period of investigating the income tax. I still go to work every day to earn my, earn my pay, do criminal investigations. One particular anecdotal story, which I think is interesting to share, is that I was asked to participate in a search warrant down in like the Fresno area, and it was this big, huge like horse property. So they had to have like 20 or 30 IRS special agents to conduct this search warrant. And at the time, I was the asset forfeiture coordinator. So in addition to whatever, more law enforcement, gun out kind of that I did initially, my main job was to inventory anything that was seized during the search warrant. Mm-hmm. And so I was also one of the searchers, one of the people that actually gather evidence in this huge property. And so the guy we were investigating actually had this very big walk-in closet, and inside the closet were bookshelves. And a number of the books on the bookshelves I had in my own bookshelves that I had accumulated over this, 2 year period. And so that was a real, kind of a red pill moment when I thought, okay, here we are investigating this guy who, hadn't filed or paid and, some kind of income tax charges that we may bring against him at some point. And yet, he's got these same books that I've either acquired or been given, on loan to investigate, the truth about the income tax. And so that was a surreal moment to be standing in this walk-in closet looking at books that this gentleman had that I had also in my own bookshelf. Mm. And anyway, it was bizarre.
So you ended up writing a book, though, about the income tax research that you did. Tell us about the book. You know, I know we ended up publishing it for you and distributing the book for you. But tell us what led you to want to write a book. And then how did you, give it to the IRS to refuse?
Well, during the 2 year period, it's probably, you don't even have to be a criminal investigator to understand if you're, some store is overcharging you, or the mechanic shop is giving you some repairs that you didn't need, and you have to gather evidence to prove out your case. That's what I did during this 2 year period, is I would gather, all these details, all this information that I never learned on the CPA exam, never learned at San Jose State, never learned in IRS training. But nevertheless was truthful because it came out of, the U.S. Supreme Court or the Internal Revenue Code or the Code of Federal Regulations. And so in gathering all of this information, I decided that it might be, beneficial, worthwhile to gather up the highlights, some of the information. If I had gathered up all the information, the report probably would have been hundreds and hundreds of pages long. But I basically gathered up some of the highlights of the evidence that I had encountered, and I put it into a report that was around 95 pages long. And so that report is what I provided. There you go. There's an old copy of it. That report is what I actually submitted to my IRS supervisors at the San Jose, California IRS headquarters. And went and, of course, I spoke with Paymon ahead of issuing the report because I kind of saw the writing on the wall that once I let my bosses know that I'm really concerned about these things, I'm not sure, how much longer I'll be able to last at the IRS. I really wasn't sure whether they'd tried to destroy what was otherwise a very excellent reputation, for being a hard worker, for being diligent, for being, honorable, having integrity. And so I really didn't know what would happen, but Paymon was certainly instrumental in helping me, how do I make sure that the public will know about me or will get to see, some of the evidence that I've encountered. And so basically, as Paymon mentioned earlier, he basically helped me to have, 10,000 copies of that report that I had issued to my supervisors ready in the event that I wouldn't be lasting very much longer at the IRS. So it was about, what's interesting is it's February 10th, and it was February 8th of 1999 when I remember, I think that was around the date that I handed in the report. And I think it was around the February 10th or so.
February 8th, you were a letter to the IRS commissioner.
Yeah.
That's the letter, yep. I have it right here, folks. Huh? Keep going, Joe, huh?
So, so February is always a month that brings back lots of memories.
Mm-hmm.
So as I recall, February 8th, so that was when I gave them the details and basically said, hey, in that letter that you're showing the audience, I've kind of gone to bat for the agency and the income tax. I've done everything I can to disprove, this evidence. But, there's a lot of things that give me concern. And by the way, I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution, the Treasury Secretary and the IRS Commissioner. Tell us that we must report waste, fraud, and abuse. Certainly the ethics of the CPA profession. Everything told me that I needed to speak up. And so I did. And it took, I think maybe nearly a week or so.
February 17th, just 9 days later.
There
you go. This is the letter they sent you, Joe. This is everybody. Yeah, we're going to put this on the recorded thing. Go ahead, Joe. Tell them about your humble response. Several pages, humble response, detailed, clear. You guys, you can read it at agentfortruth.com. All these documents are there. And we put them also link in this description. But, after all that, 3.5 pages of introduction, that's all they gave you, Joe. What did it say?
Yeah. Well, in my February 8th letter, you know, I said, of course, I wanted them to respond and to help me through what was going on here. I was finding things that were very concerning. And so I thought, well, maybe I've made an error somewhere and they can set me straight. Mm-hmm. But I did say, if you can't help me, I will have to resign because I can't serve two masters. Mm-hmm. I can't, you know, serve God and have integrity and yet also not have these questions and concerns addressed. Mm-hmm. And so in the letter that you just showed, you know, the 17th, the response was very short and it was, you know, we'll be happy to provide you with the paperwork to tend to your resignation.
Mm-hmm.
Without any answers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so once they gave me that letter, and this is up in the, you know, what's today called the special agent in charge of the San Jose, Central California District, they took my, I was to go downstairs and turn in my firearm and my badge and my credentials, and basically all I was left with was a pager. And I was sent home for a week of administrative leave. Mm-hmm. And they basically said, you know, call us in a week. Keep your pager close by in case we call you. And they sent me home for a week to think about what my next move would be. So they didn't fire me, but they, you know, put a time frame of a week of administrative leave. And so as you saw by the letter, that began on February 17th.
Mm-hmm.
So then February 25th, well, so anyway, I did go home on February 17th and, you know, dealing with a very perplexed spouse, my wife, who, you know, I had taken a pay cut back when I started with the IRS, put her through hell by having to go to Glencoe, Georgia for, you know, 16 weeks of training. The travel that was involved in being a criminal investigator. And then she was aware that during this two-year period through 1997 and 1998 that I was investigating these things. And she was concerned about that. But when I actually came, you know, home on February 17th and said, I doubt I'm going to have this job much longer, mm-hmm. it was very painful for her, for the family, for myself. And so during that week, I basically thought, you know, long and hard about what should I do. There aren't any self-help books, you know, about how to quit an IRS, a position as an IRS special agent. But I decided, and I was getting, you know, opinions from all kinds of people, including yourself. And I just thought, you know, I really have earned a good reputation for honesty and hard work. And what I don't want is to stick around the IRS and let them dirty me up with some fake, you know, accusations. And of course, in hindsight, I think I made the right decision. I mean, I'm sure your audience is well aware of the way, you know, the media and the government have to dirty people up, mm-hmm. you know, who don't deserve to be dirtied up.
Mm-hmm.
So I did decide that I was going to resign. And so February 25th of 1999, during that week, I basically composed a resignation letter.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, looking at the calendar, I'm like, wow, okay, so the 25th of February is my birthday. And it's also the day in 1913 when Philander Knox claimed that the 16th Amendment had been ratified.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, wow, the timing of this is pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to resign on my birthday, which is really, in a sense, the birthday for the income tax. And the day that I'm going to always remember that I resigned from the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
So my resignation letter is dated
mm-hmm.
February 25th, 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And What's that going to be? Is that going to be 27 years coming up here? In
just
February,
a few days, Joe, it'll be 27 years that you resigned from the IRS. And your letter, again, several pages long, folks, is a very respectful, thorough letter, thoughtful letter that Joe wrote to IRS Commissioner Charles Rosati about why he resigned. And then Joe was scheduled to speak at our March 13th, 1999 Freedom Rally of Freedom Law School, where I would have about a dozen or so speakers over 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, speak about various issues related to our freedom, our rights, government corruption. And Joe was scheduled to speak there without his picture, because at the time we went to print to put out the brochures. 2 months ahead in January, Joe was still working for the IRS. He still had not turned the book to his superiors to confront him about, hey, you need to address these legitimate concerns. So his picture wasn't on the brochure at all. And so the first time when we put Joe on our Freedom Rally in March 1999, that was the first time anybody else except myself and maybe a few other people had seen Joe in the movement in person. He came out. We had over 300 people, Joe, that turned out at the event. And at the very end, when you were the last speaker of the whole weekend, it was packed, full. No one was walking around. No one was outside the doors, chit-chatting in the hallway. They all want to know who is this IRS, you know, special agent who defected from the IRS. From the dark side of Darth Vader to the truth and freedom, okay? And so it was really a special event. And I remember, like you said, we had 10,000 copies of your book printed. And I think we distributed about 1,000 in one night. Some people have got boxes of your books to put out, you know, to get out to people because this was such a big deal. And notably, everybody, I had notified all the media in Southern California, Los Angeles, greater area, I faxed them about Joe coming out, whistleblower, exposing IRS fraud. And you know how many media reporters showed up, folks? You guessed it. Zero showed up to hear about it. So this is, you know, back then, again, Minshew was very, very new still at that time. So, Joe, you left the IRS, and I think we have to kind of end this right now, this part one of our interview. In part two, as I told you guys, we're going to how Joe, now that he left the IRS, you know, he went out to try to educate and expose the fraud of the IRS, the massive multi-trillion dollar fraud of the American people. And what that, you know, went through that process. And then part three, we will cover how the IRS try to silence Joe, try to put him in prison for taxes. And that failed. It boomeranged in the face of the IRS. So Joe has a really incredible story, folks. It's absolutely unique. You don't want to miss part two and part three of that. So Joe, I'd like to thank you very much, my friend, being with us again. And I think we're going to let Joe, I'm going to have to let Joe for the question and answer session, right? So Joe, we have to let you go, my friend. We have to take some questions from people. But thank you for being with us. I appreciate you, brother. You know, we'll be in touch with you for the next interview in a few weeks.
Thank you, Payman. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, my friend.
Take care.
Take care. Good night, Joe. Okay, folks, now I'm going to get to your questions. As you know, this is the tax strike season. Our motto is Tax 2026, like it's 1776, like the founding fathers. Okay? The government of America, federal government does not represent you anymore for many, many decades. Why are you voluntarily giving your money to these crooks and criminals? You can stop the income tax withholding from your paycheck for free on our website, freedomlawschool.org. You can, there's 7 steps to free yourself of the IRS. Okay, the first five steps are absolutely free. You can do it on your own, no charge. Do it. The last two tips are optional. If you want to get together like other truth and freedom-minded Americans together, and we have a Restore Freedom plan to work together to have America be free and protect each other from any and all IRS attacks completely, with 100% guarantee that you will not go to prison. And we do all the work, we pay the attorneys, and if they ever take your money by force, leave your paycheck or bank account or seize your home and property, we'll reimburse to you everything the IRS took from you. Out of our funds, we will make you whole. So with that, now we're going to go to your questions, everybody. Okay? So let's get your questions, folks. Okay? So let's get the numbers on the screen, guys. If anybody has questions, put the call number on the screen and the call thing. We have right now three people waiting to get their questions answered. First one from area code 229. Then the call from area code 484. Then another one from area code 516. If you want to ask a question to be on the line to get your question answered, call in 424-552-1299. And then you press 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, the number to dial is 424-552-1299. And you press 1 on your telephone keypad, and you'll be added to a list of people with questions. And then we just had another caller added from area code 818. So with that, we will start with the first caller from area code 229. Caller, please give me your first name, how you heard about Freedom Law School, and then your question, please.
Hey, my name is Derek. Could you hear me?
Yes, Dave, speak up, by the way, and how'd you hear about us? Can you guys give me a drink from the fridge, guys? Maybe like kombucha or something. Yes, Dave. How did you hear about Freedom Law School, Dave?
Okay. I've been knowing about y'all for the last, I want to say, about 7 years. I've been following y'all, and I've been doing my research on the side of, you know, just getting knowledge from you guys. But I called in to ask you a question. I haven't been doing any taxes or anything like that. But do you think the Trump account, do you think it's good to benefit the kids and go in on it, even though I don't deal with the taxes myself? How do you feel about the Trump account information?
I don't pay attention to Trump account at all, because you are not required to file and pay income taxes, Dave, to begin with, any more than you have to pay tax from, you know, from in France or Japan or Russia or Egypt. That federal income tax is for citizens and residents of the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., not you, Dave, one of the people of the 50 states. This book, the Internal Revenue Book, the Bible of the IRS, is not written for you, the people of the 50 states primarily. It applies to those people from D.C. You're not from there. So the Trump account, all those things you said, do not apply to you, the people of the 50 states. That's what I think about it. I think, let me ask you, Dave, have you been to our website, freedomlawschool.org?
Yes.
And watch our videos about income tax fraud?
Yes.
Have you gone through step one to see that, look, you're not required to file pay income tax based on the official legal websites of the U.S. government?
Yes, I've been on it, and I've seen all of that stuff.
Okay. Then don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about all those games that Congress comes up with, you know, that apply to people in Washington, D.C., not you, who is not from D.C. Any other questions, Dave?
Okay. Well, I appreciate it.
You will.
No, sir, that's it. Thank you.
Very good, my friend. All right. We have another caller now. Call from area code 484. Caller, please give me your first name, how you heard about Freedom Law School, and then your question, please.
Hey, Damon, this is Manny.
Max?
Hey, Damon, this is Manny.
Manny.
Okay, so I've been through all... Manny. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I got your 7 steps all together. I printed all the senators' application pages also for 3 senators. I still have to print the other 2. I just printed 1 set. I have to do another 2. But I'm just wondering, is there any intermediary step? I mean, because I was reading and some other blogs and such and Facebook comments also. Revocation of election or some kind of affidavit, did we need to send that, or this documentation, what we are preparing, is enough?
That's enough. The petitions are enough. Bob, how did you hear about Freedom Law School, Manny?
I already talked to Joe a couple of times and been in interaction with through email.
To Joe Bannister? So
I watch all your videos.
No, but how did you hear about Freedom Law School, though?
Website, correct. So it came through the Facebook, there is a strike group. I commented on a few of the posts also, and I saw your conversation between, what's his name, Alex Wayman or somebody who is saying CFC 7701 is not applicable.
Right.
It's only applies to everybody. That will be interesting to hear next. He's joining your call. So.
Right. Federal Income Tax Strike Group in Facebook. That's how you heard about us, right?
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah, that's right.
Very good. Okay. So, okay, continue with any other questions that you may have.
Yeah, so I'm going to get your service, but I'm going to do the documentation, and I'm just going to wait till next year. Why? There is a reason. So I personally invested in building a Montessori school, and we haven't filed a single taxes for that LLC yet. So we put so much capital, and we need to get the depreciation and everything out. So I'm just going to wait till next year. The school's probably going to finish building this year.
So why do you have to file bank income tax at all?
Back to me?
What reason do you have to? You're building a school. Mm-hmm. Great. Congratulations. I'm glad you're doing that. That's a great thing you're doing, you know. But why sign a 1040 form, confess, and claim on the oath that you owe the IRS money and end up having to pay him all this money that's used against the American people?
I know where you're coming from, but the amount we spend, something has to come back as a depreciation or whatever, right? So that's what we are trying to do, nothing else.
Well, you had a lot of withholding from your paycheck. You try to get some of that money that was stolen from your paycheck back. Is that what you're saying?
I know. One way to put it that way, yeah, I agree.
No, because what you want to do, everybody,
right. So
is stop the IRS stealing your money right now. Don't send the IRS any more quarterly estimated payments, okay? If you're a business owner or an independent contractor, mm-hmm. even an employee, stop the income tax withholding, stealing from your paycheck. Go to freedomlawschool.org on the top. Is it right? On the right, right here, there's a menu that comes out. Free yourself from tax withholding, okay? So you go to that page.
I already did the withholding.
Great.
I did the withholding at my work. I'm
exactly.
not giving any more money to them.
Good.
I've done that, and I'm going to do it next year also.
Fantastic.
So that's one part.
You're
is done. The second part is to send this application and stuff.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm on track. So
okay.
I've been through all the steps, and I had some concern, and I clarified with somebody was replying to me from your team. So that's good.
Great. Okay. Anything else, Manny? You good?
No, thank you.
You're welcome, my friend. My pleasure.
Thanks. Have a good evening.
Have a good evening, my friend. Let's go to now to 516 area code caller. You're live, my friend. Please give me your first name. I heard about Freedom Law School. And then your question, please.
Hello, Payman. My name is Steve. I actually just recently joined the school a couple of months ago. I've heard about you on a number of podcasts that I follow. Anyway, my question is, I've done steps with the W-2, the exemptions and everything, but now I live in New York, and I'm looking at their exemption form, and I did send it in yesterday, and the guidelines or the requirements to get the exemption are very deceptive, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to figure out if there's any way I can get around this, or I'm just, New York is, I know, a very aggressive state. Do I just have to suck it up and file with them?
You know, I haven't looked at that New York thing for a while, honestly, to give you an accurate answer, Steve. Because, you know, there's 42 states that claim to have a state income tax, and some of them just follow whatever the federal law is. They just go whatever you put on your W-4. They go by that. But a few states, California, New York, namely, are one of those that have their own withholding form, which is, makes it more difficult for you to stop state income tax being, you know, stolen from your paycheck, even though New York and California both follow federal income tax forms, okay, and even their laws. So I don't know about that, but remember this, Steve. As a Restore Freedom Plan member, you get unlimited consultation about any IRS issue, anything with the withholding, okay, that comes up. So let me ask you to set up a time for one of my assistants who's specially trained on this area, discuss that. If necessary, I'll be on the phone with you privately as much as necessary. Let me refresh myself on this issue with New York and get back with you on that. Okay, at that time, we can do it right. I don't want to just off the top of my head give you a wrong answer. Take advantage of the unlimited consultation you get with Freedom Law School, my friend. Okay, Steve?
Okay. Will do.
The number is 813-444-4800. Any of you have a question, you're welcome to call us. My people here will answer your questions as best as they can and guide you to also to resources on our website. The number to call again, if you have a question, call us any weekday from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. is 813-444-4800. And Saturdays right now, due to tax season, we're open until from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. So take advantage, call us, and we'll be able to help you. Any other questions, Steve?
Okay. Very good. I appreciate that. Thank you. Have a great night.
You're welcome, my friend. Thank you for calling, Steve. All right. We have now, before we get to the 81 area code caller, there's also a call from area code 816 that just joined us. So, yes? Joe's available online too. Great. Joe, I mean, and Steve can ask him questions. He can hear us and he can hear his answer. Wonderful. I didn't know we could do that. Good. Well, guess what, guys? Joe Barish is also available online. So if you want to ask him questions about things, you're welcome to ask him. Also, let us know if you have a question of me or Joe Bannister or both of us, and whoever you want to get an answer from, we'll provide an answer for you. So let's go now to the 818 area code caller. Please give us your first name, how you heard about us, and then your question, please.
Hello again. My name is Nick.
Speak up, my friend. You're too far from your microphone. What's your name again?
My name is Nick.
Uh-huh.
And I heard about you on the InfoWars.
Very good. And how may I help you, Nick?
Well, I sent you a couple days ago a copy of notice of proposed assessment from the Franchise Tax Board from California.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did. I have them all right here, Nick.
And
mm-hmm.
All right. So the first time I called you a few months ago was about the request for tax returns, and you had said that I should just ignore it until they send me the assessment. Well, they have.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I am wondering what is the best way to handle this.
The FDB letter that you got, right?
Yeah.
Okay. No problem. Well, the notice of proposed assessment that Nick received, folks, is an official tax proposal letter that the California Taxing Authority, California Franchise Tax Board by law, is supposed to mail to people. And Nick can challenge it and he has until April 1st to challenge this about $1,766 for 2022 to challenge. So the only thing you can do at this point is either ignore it and the tax become assessed or determined, or ask for hearing in writing by certified mail before that date to have proof of mailing, or send your request 10 days in advance to make sure it gets there on time. And that will stop them from fixing the amount of tax that they claim you owe. And now here, what they have on this thing is they believe that your $57,000 you made is taxable income, which it is not. Okay? And say that the tax is $1,600 and change. They claim there was $445 in withholding. The net tax they claim you owe them is $1,200. But these crooks in California add, you know, about $600 of, you know, penalty and interest. That makes it $1,766. So what you can do is you can ask for hearing. And unfortunately, they're lawless in California. The only thing the agent there that will contact you, accept from you, is a tax return. That's the only thing they accept. Okay? And if you don't want to do it, which I understand why you don't do it, they'll, they say the rule against you. They will send you a notice of action. Okay? This process, by the time you ask for hearing, by the time it's done, will take anywhere from possibly 3 to 7 months. Depending how busy the FTB may be when you send them your hearing request. So basically, before the end of this year, that will be that stage will be done. But you can appeal that to the Office of Tax Appeals if you want to, okay? And then you get a formal hearing before Office of Tax Appeals, okay? And unfortunately, they're not any better, really, from the FTB hearing officers. It's more formal, supposed to be better thing. I've went through them. They're just completely lawless. Ignore the facts. Ignore the law. So, but you can do that also. If you get very, 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 very lucky, they'll listen to you. I don't think they will. And so, but anyhow, that process will take another maybe, you know, 7 to 12 months, before they rule, in that case. And then the FTB can, potentially come after your money. And what they typically do is they go after people's paycheck or bank accounts. Are you an employee, Nick?
I am.
Okay. And you live in California. How long do you plan to stay in California?
I don't plan to stay much longer, but I just have to, you know, look for a job in Nevada.
Okay.
And that could take some time.
Okay. Well, once you leave California, have no paycheck that comes from California, no pension that comes from California, no bank account that has a presence or a branch in California, no real estate or assets in California, no stock brokerage house with, you know, that has a branch in California. Any money you make outside of California from Nevada, Texas, you know, New York, you know, Michigan, doesn't matter. France, they cannot touch it. Okay. Only they can take your money if it's coming from within California somehow. So maybe, you know, this is only less than $2,000. You want to get a little practice, do this stuff, see how it goes. And at the end, you want to leave the state and don't give them. It's totally up to you. Or pay them if you want to. It's totally up to you. But, yeah. But if you, from what you're telling me, since you're going to be leaving the state anyhow, this communist republic that sadly California has descended into, then they can go pound sound all they want because you have nothing for them to take.
Now, it sounds like requesting a hearing, that would mean that I would have to go to a court. Is that correct?
No. They give you, if you ask for an in-person hearing in the office closest to you, they'll give it to you. You're closest to Sacramento office, Citrus Heights, I think, close to Sacramento or San Francisco, they have offices there. So you can ask, I want a close office. You can go to, you be with the agent, not a court case. No. When you do an appeals office of tax appeals there, They have hearings in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, and Sacramento, three places across the street. They do hearings. And that one's like a court with administrative law judges. But the FTB hearing is only just a meeting with the FTB agents.
Okay.
So I meet with an agent, and then I do what? I give him my petitions to my legislators that I downloaded and mailed out.
You can do that, and tell them, and then you can also tell them, look, I am not required to file and pay federal income taxes. And the California 540 instructions tells me to take numbers from my federal tax form, put it in the California 540 income tax form. Well, if I do that, that'll be zero. If you want, I'll put zero on the form, give it to you, and sign it. But as far as I know, if it's zero, I'm not required to file a tax return. But if you want me to, I will file a tax return with zeros on there, give it to you right now. So that's what you're going to do.
Uh-huh. Sounds like a lot of work that I don't have time for because I work so much. If I join your Freedom Law School officially, will you guys be able to help me out with this fight with California?
Not really for two reasons, for more than one reason. Number one, there's not much you can do about California. You can delay them if you want to. Even in writing, even if you don't meet them, you don't have to meet the agent in person. You could do it by telephone call or letter writing correspondence if you want to. You don't have to go meet with them in person. Okay. Number two, the amount is so small, less than $2,000. By the time you pay us for this extra pre-existing work that you got, it's going to cost you as much as this $1,700. It is not worth it for you to fight this case, as you said. Take your time off from work to fight them. Because the same due process, procedural rights and stages you can do is the same whether you owe them $1,000 or $100,000 or $10 million. So if the tax was large, $100,000 or $10 million, well, yes, it would be worth it to you to pay somebody else like me to fight for you. But when the amount is so small, it's not really worth it. It costs too much. Plus, you will be leaving the state you said anyhow. So you can just get yourself more time if you want to by asking for hearing and all that. And at the end, the worst case, they would take 25% of your paycheck every pay period to pay off what they claim you owe them or take it out of your bank account if you have that much sitting in your bank account on the day that they issue an order to the California Franchise Tax Board to, for the bank to take your money. Okay?
Right. Okay, I see that they said that if they don't hear from me by April 1st, they said they will bill me, and so
yes,
they'll just send me a bill for that amount, that $1,700.
Yes, yes, plus interest, right?
And if I ignore that, then they'll pick it out from my bank account.
They'll send you a couple more letters before they take the money from your bank account.
Was better off just paying them and then just use my time to work on getting out of California.
That's also one option. You can pay them and just forget about it, get it done, or not pay them and leave the state. It's up to you. You have options that you can choose from. Anything else, Nick?
I can definitely choose option two, disagree with the proposed assessment, and just write him a letter and send in my petitions just for the hell of it and see what happens.
It wouldn't hurt. And I'll tell you something, brother. You know, if you're making around $60,000 a year in California, which is, you know, close
to... I make 80 now.
What's that?
I make close to 80 now.
It's
been a while.
Okay, good, good. But that's just under $40 an hour. That's not much in Citrus Heights. In Northern California, that ain't much out there. You know, you're much better off
okay.
making $25 an hour, you know, $30 an hour in someplace else across the country that has, you know, a lot lower cost of living, especially in many states with no state income tax, like Nevada, Wyoming, Tennessee, Texas, Florida, New Hampshire. You're definitely you're doing the right thing by exploring options outside of California.
Now they said that if I ask for a hearing, that it may take a long time, according to the letter, and if I lose. The hearing is not in favor of me, there will be interest accrued onto my balance. Now, will they tack on more interest to 1766?
Yes.
Or is that... Okay. So that 1766 could become larger.
Yes.
By the time the hearing ends.
Yes.
Okay. So, I think the hearing is not something that I would want to do. I'll just still protest it and send in my petitions.
Okay.
By April 1st and see what happens, I guess.
Okay.
Is that a good idea?
I think that's one viable way to go. It's a difficult situation when you have an arbitrary, aggressive state like California. There's no easy, wonderful, simple answers to give you. So, but I appreciate you and respect your decision, my friend. Any other questions you want to ask me, Nick, while you're at it?
I did, but I just forgot.
Okay. Well, it's okay. Let me take someone else's call. If you have another question, you can call back. I'll take an additional call.
Oh, yeah.
You may
okay,
have.
Cool.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much, Damon.
You're welcome, Nick. My pleasure. Now, before I take the next caller from area code 816, the number to call, we will put it on the screen for you if you have a question. The number to call is, you have a number on the screen, is area code 415. Oh, let's try that. 415. Is that there? Oh, yeah. 424-552-1299. 424-552-1299. And press 1 on your telephone keypad, and you'll be able to ask your questions. Okay. 816 Erica caller, please give me your first name, how you heard about Freedom Law School, and then your question, please. Hold on. Let me unmute you. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Jim. Can you hear me?
Yes, Jim. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. I first heard about Freedom Law School because back in like 2003, 2004, I started my own business. And for the first time, I had to start paying taxes, payroll tax, income tax, this tax, that tax, had the IRS calling me. And, you know, I felt like there was just something really wrong with all that. I didn't know what. I just knew it was wrong. And then the Internet was coming out basically at that time pretty big. And I was on the Internet, and I seen this video of this girl, Katherine Bleich, of the Liberty Restoration Project up in Jefferson City, going around to all the representatives handing out the video, Freedom to Fascism. I was really impressed with that, so I went down and met them at one of the rallies, in the Fed rally. I got involved with it, and I met that juror, Marcy Brooks, who found Whitney Harrell not guilty for 4 counts of failure to file. And when I met that juror, I was like, okay, well, there's something to this. And then I researched it further, ran across you, and, you know, I ended up finding out that, you know, the reason that there was no income tax is because a direct tax on our income is considered slavery. And I followed this. And the reason that I'm calling is because recently I found out that the state of Illinois refiled charges on Whitney Harrell and took him back to court and found him not guilty. And this is the first time hearing of this, and I felt that that was double jeopardy, for one. And then I guess my next part of this question would be, I know you have the petitions to send into Congress, our representatives, about the federal income tax, but I was wondering if you could, like, put some kind of petition together so that we could send in regards to the state law, which several of the states say you are required to file a state return if you're required to file a federal, okay, which is what had happened in Illinois with Whitney Harrell. Well, he showed that there was no federal law, so he didn't have to file a state. They turned around and took him back to court anyway and found him guilty of that. So I was wondering if you guys could come up with some kind of petition so that we could mail in addressing the state law about if there's no federal law, you don't have to file a state, so that if they try to come back at somebody, you know, they couldn't get you trying to say you was avoiding anything.
Okay.
If that makes
any sense. I understand your question. Here's the thing. There's 42 states, Jim, that claim to have a state income tax.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just too much work for me to and too expensive for most people if I were to try to do that petition for every state petition.
Well, maybe not for every state. Maybe not for every state, but the states that actually piggybacked off federal law.
Still, most states that claim income tax, they do. Most states with a claim of state income tax, they follow federal law. That's the vast majority of them. Oh, okay. Now, the other thing is
How do they come back after Whitney
Harrell?
Hold on.
Let me address your question. Whitey Harrell was not one of my students. He was tried in late 1990s. Okay, and then they came after him for other years. I understand they got him for those other years. It was not for the same years that he was acquitted. And this time they made sure they railroaded him. Okay, so he did my program. But with Freedom Law School program, okay, you be protected from state also, especially if you become a Restore Freedom Plan, because we guarantee that you will not go to prison. Okay, and I know the laws, the federal and the state. You just don't know how to present that, because it's not so simple that I could do that for every single state now. Does that mean over the years I could not gradually do that? Yes, it takes a lot of time and research and money to put all this together for every single state law. 42 states. It's not an easy job. 42 countries. It's not learning law, all laws of all the countries of Europe and then some. Okay? So that's what I got to do. It's not so easy to put it in an exact, precise, perfect thing like that. But your federal ones will protect federal petitions, will protect it from state if your state, like Illinois, does follow federal law anyways. Because Whitey Harrell did not do our process. So you cannot compare his, you know, later on going to jail to what we did at all. Two different things. He didn't have our petitions at all. Because it did not even exist at the time.
So what you're saying, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, our petitions did not exist when he went to jail. Okay, did not exist at all for him to use.
So basically what you're saying is either join Freedom Law School's program or file taxes with the state.
No, I'm not saying that either. What I'm saying is that with the state also, you could use that for the state also. But, first of all, states do not come after people hardly at all. Okay, they become less and less and less coming after people criminally. Like California used to come after people criminally back in the 1980s. But they lost some cases. It was too expensive. They just became more aggressive to take people's bank account paychecks. And it was much less costly and efficient for them. They stopped criminal prosecutions. Because they could just go take your paycheck 25%. Criminal trials are very, very expensive compared to them just simply taking your part of your paycheck or bank account. Okay, so states do not do criminal cases hardly at all. They do once in a while, but you know. But I'm not saying it's either or. Look, hold on. So, but if you really, really are concerned about that, look, there's an option, but you don't have to. Because I'm telling you, they're going to leave you 99.9% alone anyways, because all they want, states, is your money. Criminal prosecution and jailing costing them too much as well. Okay? And with our petitions, you have a solid case at least. You can at least hire me or somebody else, an attorney, say, hey, based upon my federal petitions, defend me if they come after you. Well,
I've sent in my petitions. I have done that already. I sent them in 3 or 4 years ago.
Good.
Yeah. And actually here in Missouri right now, as we speak, they're actually debating on trying to be the 10th state to get rid of the Missouri income tax.
Great.
So I've requested today that we send some petitions to Senator Joe Nicola. He's the one that's heading the fight up on this, and our governor.
Great. Support them. Yeah.
Yeah, I am. That's why I requested today that you guys send in one of your magazines to his office, you know, explaining how that works where there's no federal law. Because I actually called their office today and talked to one of their secretaries, and I was explaining to them how the U.S. citizen only applies to the federal territories at District of Columbia. It doesn't apply to the states, and she didn't know that. She's like, really? I'll have to look that up. And I gave them your website and all that, so hopefully they further look into it, or hopefully somebody from your office, you know, further contacts them and gets them further involved in this, because I sure would like to see Missouri do away with it, man, because I'm tired of feeling like a slave every time I go to work.
Then, Jim,
I go to work, all you do is put yourself in trouble with the law.
Then, Jim, if you're tired of being a slave, rather than putting it upon us, our costs, our expense to contact your representatives in Missouri, we'll mail you the brochures for free, Restore Freedom brochures, all you want, and you send it to them, you contact them, you follow up with them, because they work for you to begin with, not for me. I'm not from Missouri. These brochures, folks, Restore Freedom brochures.
I'm going to send them.
But hold on, let me finish. It's not, let me ask everybody else, too. Are 12 pages. They, in 10 pages, they tell you the law very clearly why no law requires 99% of Americans to file and pay income and payroll taxes. $50,000 reward. If you can find anything legally wrong with what's in here, show me I'm wrong about this stuff, okay? That's one. We'll cover the other one. Has a little bit a different cover. Same content. Fast track your success. So we'll get it to you. Call us, these brochures, and you get as many of them if you want to your representatives, and tell them, hey, do something about all this. And you can follow up with them, because it's your money that they're going to be taking, my friend. Not mine. I cannot contact every one of the 42 states in America about this stuff. Okay, I got other stuff that I got to take care of.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I appreciate it, and I did request those magazines, and I will be passing them out, I promise you.
What's your business, Bobby, Jim? What do you do?
You're doing, man.
Jim, what do you do for a living?
I do concrete work.
Okay. Do you have any employees?
Well, currently no, but my season hasn't started yet.
When it starts, though, you don't take any money out of your employee's paycheck, do you?
No, I actually am giving them your petitions, showing them the law and why they are not required to file or pay an income tax. That's what I do, yes.
Good for your brother. Good for your brother. Good that you do the right thing. Loving thing for your workers. I'm glad to hear that. That's all I want to make sure about that. Thank you for doing that, Jim. I appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, no problem. I tell everybody about your deal. And like I said, I do, I give them the petition so that they know why, you know, there's no taxes taken out, because by law they're not required to.
Yes, exactly.
And it is slavery.
Exactly, exactly.
And you know, the thing is, here in Missouri, we've got a lot of people I talk to about the taxes, and the Democrats keep telling me, oh, we want to keep the income tax because then the taxes of goods will go up, and then I can't afford shoes. And I'm like, you know, where is it my place to have to work and take my hard-earned money to pay into a system so you can buy shoes? Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. And then there's one YouTube podcaster I listen to. Oh, what's her name? I forget. This black lady on there. She says the Democratic Party is masters looking for slaves, and the Democratic voters are slaves looking for masters.
Yep.
And that's what I say about anybody who wants the income tax. Because
mm-hmm.
it is slavery, period, mm-hmm. bar none.
Yep.
It's exactly what it is.
Yep.
I believe in a consumption tax, not mm-hmm. a direct tax on our income where we have no choice but to work. Mm-hmm. If we don't pay it, we go to jail. That's mm-hmm. not freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally against the principles of liberty this country was founded on.
Better idea, we can tax only foreigners, tax importing goods. Students that come to study in America and universities, they can pay a tax. The university that educates them, they can pay a tax. immigrants that come to America to work. We can tax them, and then their children will be free as American-born citizens. So we could tax foreigners and be income tax-free completely, even get rid of no consumption tax either like that. So thank you, brother, for calling. Yeah, I appreciate it, Jim. Yes, any last questions?
Let me just say this.
Sure.
My family's been in this country since way back before it was America. My family fought in the Civil War. My grandfather fought on the Union side, but, you know, the Civil War supposedly ended slavery. So, you know, I am a true American, and so is my family.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate it. It took a foreigner to come over here to our country, new to our laws, to try to learn them, to understand them, to point this out to us. So, yeah. So thank you for all that you do.
You're welcome, my friend. I sometimes wonder about that. God works in mysterious ways, you know, puts us in places we don't expect to be. I never imagined I'd be doing that when I was growing up in Iran, you know, back in 1960s and 70s. Yep. All right, Jim, thank you for your support and my love. I appreciate you, brother Jim. Let's go to, we have two more callers right now. We need to get the questions answered. I think we have one caller, right? Let's see. Let's see. Area code, I think 816 area code caller, right? He's the only one left. 818. That was Nick, wasn't it? No, hold on. Let me see if I get it right. Well, that's right, 818. Okay, yeah, that's right. 818 area code caller, you're live, my friend. Please give me your first name, how you heard about Freedom Law School, and then your question, please.
Hi, Damien. This is Nick again. I just remembered my question that I forgot.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hi. So, on that notice, on page 3, the instructions for the written protest, it says that I have to fill out this quick resolution worksheet.
You don't have to. It's optional. They're asking you.
Oh, okay.
It's like a tax return.
Okay.
Basically, it's like a tax return. If you fill it out, it's equivalent to filing a tax return because, you know, you have to sign it at the end. Okay? Under penalty of perjury.
You
just a very expedited, quick tax return. That's all it is.
All right, so no quick resolution worksheet. I just send my package.
Well, you can do that. You can use it. Just check the box on option 2, I want to protest. That's a form for you to ask for hearing. That's what it is. You can fill out on page 1 of that quick resolution worksheet. At the bottom, option 2, I want a protest. I disagree with the proposed assessment. So yeah, you can send that in, and that way asking for a hearing. Okay?
Okay. Okay, now, if I send this protest in this petition that I'm using for my protest. Now, will they consider that as a frivolous excuse? And
no, just asking for a protest is fine. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. That's your right to ask for a protest.
Okay.
All right, Nick.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Before we get the questions online that maybe people have, I'm going to put the number on the screen one more time to get your questions answered. If you have a question orally you want to ask me, people, or Joe Bannister, who is still with us, the number to call is 424-552-1299 and press 1. On your telephone keypad, dial 424-552-1299 and then press 1. On your telephone keypad if you have a question. Okay. We have a caller right now from area code 303 area code caller. Please give me your first name, how you heard about Freedom Law School, and then your question. Please, you're there?
Okay.
Yes. What's your name?
Oh, hello. Paymon, are you talking to me? I'm sorry.
Are you from Erica 303? Yes, you are.
I am. I'm sorry. I was watching the feed. I just called in, and yeah, it surprised me. I apologize. Sorry for that delay. I have been doing...
Your name and how do you hear about us?
I am... Oh, sorry. Yes, my name is Kara. Called in a couple weeks ago. Good to talk to you again, Paymon. I believe I heard from you. Heard about you probably on Rumble feed or something. Okay. But it's good to talk with you again, and thanks for taking my call. So I was doing a little bit of research, and you know, on one of the AI engines, because my husband is a little bit skeptical, and I wanted to see one of the things that it keeps pounding down my throat is, well, the definition of 50 states is 50, or the 50 of states is 50 states. And it says, you know, but the courts have upheld that. And, I mean, it even threw Bush Aber at me, at one point. I know that, I should be a little bit more, careful here, because everybody is not familiar with necessarily, the Bush Aber decision, but that's a famous one. Mm-hmm. Came about in, I don't remember what year here. I'm trying to scroll down to it. But it's a famous decision that you quote in your paperwork, in the petitions. Mm-hmm. And actually, you quote it correctly, and I guess that a lot of them quote it incorrectly. It was a Supreme Court decision, Bush Aber versus Union Pacific Railroad Company in 1916. And it was talking about whether the 16th Amendment granted new taxing power. And, but what they keeps on, you know, saying, even though I've said it, you know, the Meese, decision that's in the petition, and the Gould versus Gould, petition, or rather, sorry, decision from 1917, about the narrow construction of tax provisions and all that kind of stuff, it's still saying, you know, 50 states. And I know it's a gatekeeper AI. It's just the Leo AI from the Brave browser. But I was wondering, just in a general sense, how do you deal with that? Like, not necessarily with
the AI. Here's the thing about AI. AI is giving you a wrong answer, because AI is programmed, pre-programmed with certain things. Like, well, they programmed that people in 50 states got to pay income tax.
Absolutely.
So what you have to do, in fact, I've done that. Absolutely. In fact, can you put that on the screen? Can you put it on my screen, the AI stuff? I've done two videos, two different times, on two different AIs. I think one was with the ChatGPT, and the other was, I think, what Meta with it. Yeah, with it. And it took me a work, but one time I was able to convince them about it, Meta. And I think ChatGPT was the thing just broke down. It literally broke down.
Nice.
Yeah, it just couldn't handle it. It couldn't handle the truth. Okay? So let's put it on the screen. Yeah. See, this is one of them. Let's see. What was the date we did this one? You can watch this one. Scroll down a little bit. This was done 8 months ago. Okay? This is part two. I did one part, but also. So, and there's another one I did also. If you go out to our channels, okay, like a YouTube channel or Exodus channel on a social media, you could, on a search bar, bring these things up, and they'll just put that AI on there. I search, and the videos will come up. If you need help, call us. We help you. But anyhow, you got to pretty much give it the things in my 10-minute short first presentation, like one at a time, and argue back with it. That's what I did. My first 10-minute video, I gave them the U.S. Treasury regulations, the 1.1-1. Then I gave a definition of many different three United States in law. That could be sometimes D.C., sometimes the 50 states as a collective, sometimes 50 states individually. So you just got to give it to it, argue back with it. You got to know that those contents of our first video. And put it up there. Here we go. We got on there on Odyssey, as you can see. I've done on AI 8 months ago, 11 months ago, 2 years ago. I've done AI. We're going to do another AI thing. We're going to do it also. I'll do one this tax season also. And that's a topic, guys. The free ride. We're going to do AI. Okay? Remind me. We'll do that for the AI.
Absolutely.
So, but that's all. You just got to go a little type it in it and kind of tighten it loose on it and tell, look, don't give me vague answers. I want straight, clear, black and white answer, not what it looks like, what it may be. You know, you just kind of tied in a noose, and I said, like I said, one time, one AI, I said, you're right. Citizen and residents of D.C. got a file income tax, not the people of the 50 states.
Nice.
And another time, they I think it was ChatGPT, it went kaput. They're like, what? What happened? It couldn't handle it. So watch those videos. You see what I did? And you want to test them out in your AI. By the way, the AIs are programmed not to learn from you. Now, if you go back under your account and bring up that research, it remembers it for you, but not for everybody else. They do that deliberately.
Yeah, it's not like on Star Trek where Captain Kirk would basically melt down the computer by answering so logically that it basically said, you know, this error, you know.
Right. Well, no, actually, that happened to us. One of these videos, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, you. Yeah.
I did do that. ChatGPT, I think, was broke down. So it did happen because they tell it that, you know, that... You know, the put falsehood in there, and when I tell the truth, he can't handle it. Look, I'm supposed to believe this thing that he showed me clearly. It's a lie. I don't know what to do with that. Okay, that's what happened there. It broke down.
Right.
So yeah, have fun with those videos.
Right.
Show them, you know, if you want to.
Language models.
Yeah. Yep. Try those and see. Have fun with it. And I'm going to do another one in the upcoming weeks, anyhow, on AI, anyhow, for everybody to see, have a little fun with it. Okay?
Yeah, nice. Well, you know, where I was going with that, though, had to do with, and maybe, you know, Joe has some idea as well, how to, you know, because I think that, you know, what the tactics that are used in the AI are probably going to be similar. And you would know this more because you've seen this, or I guess I should ask you, is that something that you see as far as the tactics used against people, you know, trying to point out these definitions and things like that? Do you see that same kind of answer? Well, it's you know, the courts have upheld, you know, the definition of state is 50 states, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah, they do that. They got these, you come across it sometimes, the courts, you know, they just don't want to upset the apple cart. Okay, since late 30s, when President Roosevelt started putting some communists on the Supreme Court, for many, many decades, these guys were there, and people like that. And so it was only changed after Trump came to power. Finally, he got to nominate three Supreme Court justices, okay, that were, you know, much more freedom-loving than the past, and things turned. We have, for the first time ever, generally speaking, a majority 5-4, originalist, constitutionalist-oriented Supreme Court justices, and four of that don't. Three of them definitely don't. Six of them generally do, but sometimes one or two of them don't. So, yeah, things have changed. But, yeah, the courts would just ignore you. They say, oh, we don't have to respond to you with copious reasoning, you know, all this stuff. It's a waste of time. They would just ignore you and rule against you. And, unfortunately, the lower courts just have that opinion. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter here because there's about 80 million non-filers, according to IRS's own best estimates. So with 80 million non-filers, guess what? There's no way they can come after all of you, all non-filers, but they have only about 20 tax court judges. If you're a non-filer, they have to give you a tax proposal letter called the Notice of Deficiency, give you a chance to ask for a hearing, a full trial with a U.S. tax court judge. There's simply not enough judges to handle 80 million cases per year for non-filers. Even a tiny fraction of them, they cannot do that. That's why they leave non-filers alone. It's too expensive to come after non-filers. These court cases doesn't matter. Okay, one, here it is. Look at this on my screen. IRS collects over $300 for every filer on the average. For non-filers, IRS collects under $3. If you're the IRS, Would you rather spend a dollar and collect over $300 from filers? Or would you rather collect under $3 from non-filers? The answer is pretty obvious. They'd rather go after filers because over 100 times more profit.
I like $0, but I hear what you're saying.
So don't worry about these court cases. People see the thing is going to automatically going to get them. It's not true. That's why, Kara, you want to help have your husband go through the 7 steps on our website, okay? With you, watch them, honey. Make your husband a great dinner, okay? Great dinner. I'm serious. One night and start watching from each step. Okay, great dinner. Wine and dine, husband. And let's watch for each step one video. Step one, two, three, four, five, four, night one. And later on, second, third night, you can go through them in more detail. Okay? Knowledge is the answer. Ignorance is the problem that leads to fear. And the love of truth shall set you free, because the truth will free you. So with that, please give your husband a great dinner coming this weekend, maybe Saturday night. I'll watch the 7 steps to be free of the IRS on our website. Go through them with him and have a great evening with him. Okay?
That's a great idea. I've been trying to get him I have this amazing hamburger casserole that I've been wanting to make him. So, yeah, absolutely. That sounds great. One more quick question, if I could. And it's sort of non sequitur, and you don't have to answer it. But when you were talking about all the fact that, you know, there's so much that's already collected by the states and really it goes on up federal government as well in fees and that sort of thing. I was thinking about, you kind of alluded to that, and I apologize, I don't remember the exact statement that you made. I think it was to the caller a couple times ago, but I was wondering if you were aware of the technology about the comprehensive annual financial report.
Yes.
If that was what you were referring to, or if that was something else.
No, something else. I'm aware of CAFR, as you're talking about, but that's something beyond what I talk about.
Yeah, CAFR.
I know about CAFRs. 25 years ago, I heard about those, yes.
Yep. Yeah, I met the guy that actually discovered that in Massachusetts or someplace like that.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a really neat guy.
Yes, he
but
is.
Yeah, anyway, that was, I appreciate your help on all this. Always, Payman, and you know, keep up the good fight. Thanks so much for all you do.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Glad to have helped you. Thanks for calling, Kara. All right, folks, we're going to go to questions online on this. There's more questions you want to ask us orally. The number to call is 424-552-1299. And then you press 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. Again, to get your question answered live now, call 424-552-1299. And then press 1 on your telephone keypad. I will take your question next. Meanwhile, do you have any questions online to ask? No, there's no questions there. It's all good. Very good. All right, guys. Thank you very much, you know, for calling. You know, and I'm here with you every Tuesday night. But at the end, the solution for you to be free that you've been looking for is in your hands. Call us. We'll mail you these brochures for free. Follow the law. Restore freedom. Okay? There's only 12 pages. You can study them at lunch or dinner. Get a bunch from us. Put in your dentist office, mechanics office, anywhere. Friends, relatives, co-workers. Okay? Easy to read. Very easy to read. Big friends. But better yet, in your car, listen to our videos. Play them. Watch the road. Listen. I learn as you drive safely. Then at lunch, at work, or dinner at home, watch it again. This time, watch and verify that what you're hearing is actually the law that I'm talking about for you. or government's own official reports. Okay, that's the way, folks, to lose all the fear. That's the way to get the confidence. That's the way to know you are doing the true, right, legal, safe thing for yourself and your family. And also, text people, okay, and email your friends. Here it is, our website, okay? Step one, unfollow the law, the video, or this page, or the brochure. Read brochures right here that I've showed you. You can have these brochures also downloaded or share the link with other people that you know, okay? So share it with them. Ask them, look, I want to collect the $50,000 on this brochure on the back. Help me collect it, please. 12 pages. This guy makes this incredible claims that are unbelievable. He says, no law requires 99% of Americans to file and pay income and payroll taxes. So please, listen. This is quick, easy money for both of us. And follow up with people. Your friends, relatives, say, hey, did you listen to it on your drive home? The videos? Hey, did you check out the brochure at lunchtime or dinner? I really appreciate your help. I really respect your opinion. I'd like you to help me out if you could, please. People like to be fortunate that way. Rather than trying to convince them, try it that way. That will work better. Okay? So with that, people, I love you all, and I want you to be free. So it was not accident that you watched this program. You came across Freedom Law School. You were meant to be free. You were looking for freedom. You found it. Seize it at Freedom Law School. And freedom is yours.